produced and distributed by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C. This is your normal daily audio stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Welcome to the most popular podcast regarding marijuana in all of America and all the world. Featuring interviews with scientists, politicians, doctors, prohibition policy activists, regular cannabis consumers, musicians, artists, and Normal's staff and Normal's board of directors, along with music and comedy no other podcast can offer. You can always find out more about the show at our website, stash.normal.org. And continue the education and conversation on our blog as well. We're ending marijuana prohibition with education, one listener at a time. The podcasting and blogging technology for the Normal Daily Audio Stash is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. Visit www.redaphid.com. It's Friday, May 16th, and it's 4:20 somewhere in the world. I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville, and this is your normal daily audio stash. We have another extra special stash for you to take into the weekend. First, CelebStoner.com's Steve Bloom checks in with a report from the MPP fundraiser in New York City. Then, for our musical break, we have a special interview with Suburban Noise Records artist The Dirtball. His new CD, Crook County, has dropped this week, and we're going to bring you the new single, Mushroom Cloud. Even though the Dirtball's hometown, Bend, Oregon, out there in Crook County, seriously, Crook County, is a three-hour drive from Normal West Coast Media headquarters, I'm still going to call him my homeboy. To conclude the podcast, we've got a special interview with Kevin Booth, the writer-director of the phenomenal drug war documentary, American Drug War, The Last White Hope. If you haven't seen this movie, you need to. It may still be running on Showtime, or you can get your copy online. Just check the links at our blog, stash.normal.org, or you can buy your own copy at your local video store on Tuesday, May 27th. Finally, don't forget that every Saturday we're now posting the Normal Weekend Music Stash, where you can get all of the last 10 songs from our daily musical breaks in one podcast, suitable for your weekend party pleasure. And if you have a band that you would like to be featured on our podcast, please send us an email at stash@normal.org. So sit back and relax with some OG Kush and enjoy your Normal Daily Audio Stash. Now it's time to take a look at the latest stories about marijuana from news organizations across America and around the world in our normal daily audio stash, Hemp Headlines. Two Modesto men found guilty in medical marijuana case. From the Modesto Bee, Fresno, California. A federal jury found two Modesto men guilty Thursday of drug charges for operating a medical marijuana dispensary, which raked in $6 million to $9 million in less than 2 years. Luke Scarmazzo and Ricardo Ruiz Montes, both 27, immediately were taken into custody. Both men were convicted of manufacturing marijuana and distributing the drug, as well as operating a continuing criminal enterprise, a felony that carries a mandatory 20-year minimum prison term with the possibility of life behind bars. In September 2006, federal authorities raided the California Healthcare Collective in Modesto after a long investigation that included undercover drug buys. Scarmazzo and Montes said they never intended to break the law. The business, their attorney said, was above board, operating a business license, paying taxes, and making sure patients had doctor's notes before purchases. Scarmazzo's attorney said after the verdict, quote, everything the defendants did was legal under state law, end quote. But neither he nor Montes's attorney were able to use state law as a defense because under federal law, marijuana is illegal. A key part of the trial was a hip-hop video that featured Scarmazzo uttering the line, quote, fuck the feds, end quote. Scarmazzo, a musician and aspiring hip-hop artist, took the stand to explain, saying it was his way of showing that the federal government, quote, is turning a blind eye, end quote, to medical marijuana, which he said could help people. The video was perhaps the most sensational part of the trial, and there were suggestions from Scarmazzo's attorney that Scarmazzo was on trial only because he dared to challenge the federal government's authority. Jurors deliberated for 2 days before delivering their verdict. One juror, Craig Will of Tulum County, said after the verdict that he expected the two men to get probation or a few months in prison. He said, quote, I'm really appalled to discover that there's a 20-year mandatory minimum on the continuing criminal enterprise charge, end quote. Dispensary owners in California are forbidden from even saying the words medical and marijuana in the same paragraph when they go on trial in federal court. The juror listed in this case isn't the first to be appalled at the mandatory sentences that people can receive for operating legally under state law. Most jurors, once they are told the case involves medical marijuana, are usually distraught that they were forced to render a verdict without knowing the entire story. This further underscores why we need your help to pass Ron Paul's H.R. 5842 to end the DEA raids in California and the other 11 medical marijuana states, and why we need to elect a president in November who promises to end these raids. Some detainees are drugged for deportation. From the Washington Post. The U.S. government has injected hundreds of foreigners it has deported with dangerous psychotropic drugs against their will to keep them sedated during the trip back to their home country, according to medical records, internal documents, and interviews with people who have been drugged. The government's forced use of antipsychotic drugs in people who have no history of mental illness includes dozens of cases in which the, quote, pre-flight cocktail, end quote, as a document calls it, had such a potent effect that federal guards needed a wheelchair to move the slumped deportee onto an airplane. Such episodes are among more than 250 cases the Washington Post has identified in which the government has, without medical reason, given drugs meant to treat serious psychiatric disorders to people it has shipped out of the United States since 2003, the year the Bush administration handed the job of deportation to the Department of Homeland Security's new Immigrations and Custom Enforcement Agency, known as ICE. Involuntary chemical restraint of detainees, unless there is a medical justification, is a violation of some international human rights codes. The practice is banned by several countries where, confidential documents make clear, U.S. escorts have been unable to inject deportees with extra doses of drugs during the layovers en route to faraway places. Federal officials have seldom acknowledged publicly that they sedate people for deportation. The few times officials have spoken of the practice, they have understated it, portraying sedation as rare and, quote, an act of last resort, end quote. Neither is true, records and interviews indicate. Records show that the government has routinely ignored its own rules, which allow deportees to be sedated only if they have a mental illness requiring the drugs, or if they are so aggressive that they imperil themselves or the people around them. All right, now one of the drugs used in these cases was Haldol. 38 detainees were given 10 to 29 milligrams, 4 were given 30 to 39 milligrams, and 2 of the detainees were given 40 milligrams of this very potent drug, used to treat schizophrenia, psychosis, persistent aggressiveness, Tourette's syndrome, or manic disorder. Now, it produces a zombie-like effect in non-psychotic people. It has the usual side effects of dizziness, drowsiness, difficulty urinating, trouble sleeping, headache, anxiety, and pain at the injection site. It may cause muscle spasms or stiffness, tremors, restlessness, mask-like facial expression, and drooling. The recommended daily doses for aggressive behavior are half a milligram twice a day, up to 5 milligrams 3 times a day, although doses of 10 milligrams a day may be used in a hospital emergency room. The government gave these 44 detainees well over 10 milligrams of this dangerous drug. Now keep in mind, this is the same government that tells you marijuana has no medicinal value and is extremely dangerous, so much so that even your doctor can't prescribe it to you. Rhode Island Senate passes Marijuana Compassion Center bill. Providence, Rhode Island. Rhode Island Senate has approved a bill permitting up to 3 nonprofit stores to sell marijuana to chronically ill patients registered with the state. A spokesman for Senate President Joseph Montalbano said the proposal passed Thursday 29-6. It now heads to House lawmakers. Senator Rhoda Perry, the bill's sponsor, has said the proposal fixes a loophole in Rhode Island's medical marijuana program. State lawmakers voted in 2006 to allow chronically ill patients and their caregivers to possess small amounts of marijuana for pain relief, but they never made clear how patients were supposed to buy the drug. It remains illegal under federal law. More than 700 patients and caregivers are enrolled in the state's medical marijuana program. This is a huge victory. A 29-6 vote means the measure has a veto-proof majority. Rhode Island's Governor Carcieri vetoed the original medical marijuana bill, which was overturned by the legislature, and I imagine he'll be quick to veto this measure if it should make it to his desk. Now, the companion bill, H-7888, needs to be passed by the 75-member General Assembly. 45 votes would provide the veto-proof majority we need to get past Governor Carcieri and create the first medical marijuana compassion centers on the East Coast. Hawaii legislature approves medical marijuana task force measure. Honolulu, Hawaii. The Hawaii legislature has approved legislation to establish the formation of an 11-member task force to investigate options for providing legal cannabis for Hawaii's state-qualified medical cannabis patients. The bill now awaits action from Governor Linda Lingle. An estimated 3,000 Hawaiians are registered to use medical cannabis under state law. As approved by the legislature, House Bill 2675 calls on the task force to make recommendations regarding the feasibility of developing safe growing facilities for qualified patients with written certification to grow medical marijuana for their medical use. The task force is also mandated to review statewide guidelines authorizing the amount of medical cannabis patients may legally use and possess under state law. The task force must submit its recommendations, including any proposed legislation, to the legislature no later than 20 days prior to the convening of the 2009 regular session. Good news for our friends out on the islands, to be sure, but man, sometimes the pace of positive drug law reform seems so slow, doesn't it? They aren't moving to get medicine to patients. They're moving to talk about how they might get medicine to patients. The key to this measure will be the impaneling of the task force. The bill lays it out as follows. There is established within the University of Hawaii for administrative purposes a medical marijuana task force. The College of Tropical Agriculture and Human Resources shall be responsible for administering the work of the medical marijuana task force, providing a facilitator, and submitting a report to the legislature. The members of the medical marijuana task force shall consist of 11 members as follows. The Director of Public Safety, the Director of Health, the Director of Transportation, the Attorney General, or a person these directors designate, 3 members of the Drug Policy Forum of Hawaii, 3 patient advocates to be appointed by the Governor, the President of the Senate, and the Speaker of the House, and a prescribing physician. 4 government types, 3 reformers, 3 patients, and a doctor. Sounds promising.
Hello, I'm Paul Stanford from the Hemp and Cannabis Foundation, or THCF. Medical marijuana is legal in 12 states today, and THCF has medical clinics in 6 of those states. Our physicians help qualified patients obtain an authorization for medical marijuana in their state. Patients are eligible for medical marijuana with a history of either severe chronic pain and or nausea, cancer, AIDS or HIV, hepatitis, glaucoma, seizure disorders like epilepsy, chronic muscle spasms as in multiple sclerosis or asthma, neurodegenerative diseases such as Alzheimer's, and gastrointestinal disorders like IBS or Crohn's disease. If you or someone you know has one of these conditions, our doctors will help them obtain a permit for medical marijuana. THCF Medical Clinics has offices in Washington State, Oregon, Colorado, Nevada, Hawaii, and California. Call 1-800-723-0188 or go to the web at www.hemp.org or 1-800-723-0188.
Now it's time to play Pass the Stash, where you can win cool prizes from Normal.
All right, I'm happy to announce we've got a winner in our Pass the Stash contest from all the way on the other side of the globe. Chris Fowley from New Zealand Normal sent me in some pictures and some great New Zealand slang for marijuana that I decided was going to be our winner. So, Chris, you've got a copy of King Spade's DVD, Throw Your Spades Up, live at the Key Club, making its way across the Pacific Ocean and into your mailbox. I'll have my interview with Chris Fowley and some of the pictures posted on the Stash for Monday, so stay tuned for that. And thanks, everybody, for playing Pass the Stash.
Hey, you no good degenerates. This is Harry J. Anslinger taking over your airwaves to tell you the truth about the demon drug, marijuana. It's Reefer Madness! How many murders, suicides, robberies, criminal assaults, holdups, burglaries, and deeds of maniacal insanity it causes each year, especially among the young, can only be conjectured. No one knows when he places a marijuana cigarette to his lips whether he will become a joyous reveler in a musical heaven, a mad insensate, a calm philosopher, or a murderer.
This Reefer Madness quote was actually uttered by our nation's first drug czar, Harry J. Anslinger, in the early 20th century press reports calling for the prohibition of what was better known to Americans as cannabis hemp. We now return you to your regularly scheduled daily audio stash. Time for the weekend, and as usual, we like to visit with the proprietor of CelebStoner.com, Steve Bloom, who joins us on the telephone from New York. Steve, welcome.
Hey there, Russ. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing great. Hey, I just wanted to let everyone know out there in the audience that I finally received my copy of Pot Culture, the A to Z Guide to Stoner Language and Life, your book that you co-wrote with Shirley Halperin. It is a fantastic read.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, it's got everything you'd ever want to know. It's kind of, you know, kind of like a dictionary in a sense where you can go look up particular terms, or maybe like an encyclopedia, but also I love the little sidebars you've got with the different celebrities showing you how to make like a can pipe or how to hide the smell. It's a great book. Now, how can people get a hold of their own copy?
It's available everywhere. You know, it's available in all bookstores, presumably Barnes & Noble, Borders, Virgin, wherever. It's online on Amazon and other websites. You get a discount if you buy it at Amazon. The book is a $20 book, and I think it's about $13.50 at Amazon, but, you know, you'll have to pay for shipping. So it'll probably add up to a similar amount. But, you know, it's everywhere. It really is. A lot of people do ask the question, and they're kind of surprised, you know, will it be everywhere? And it is. It's a mainstream publisher going to through mainstream distribution, and that's really what we want. I mean, we're happy that Normal is stocking it online and selling it, and we want to go through the, you know, Normal chapters and organizations and different, you know, legalization groups out there to help support, you know, the book. But, you know, it's out there already, and it's available, you know, to find next to, you know, all the other books that are out there now.
Yeah, there's going to be something in this for anyone. I think, you know, even if you're not a cannabis consumer, you could learn about the culture through this. And the culture is so pervasive now in even just the mainstream movies and songs that it could help the average person understand a little bit better what's going on in some of these videos and music. Even for the cannabis community out there, whether you're, you know, just an occasional toker or, you know, one of us hardcore types, even if you think you know everything about pot, there's going to be something you'll find in there that you didn't know before. It's really, really a fascinating read. So,
well, we tried to mix it up between myself and my co-author Shirley Halperin. You know, she's female, I'm male. She lives in L.A. I live in New York. She's younger than me. I'm older than her. I worked at High Times many years. She works in Entertainment Weekly. You know, she's kind of represents sort of the everyday stoner, and I kind of represent a lot of the activists. So we sort of combined all that, all those different things about our backgrounds and poured it into the book. So, you know, I tried to take advantage of, you know, my, you know, connections in the marijuana community to make sure that, you know, all the organizations and some of the major players are represented in the book, and, you know, make sure that there's a section on Lester Grinspoon and, you know, things like that, as well as digging into the history, going, you know, back to the Reefer Madness era and kind of looking at how marijuana, you know, has progressed over time. The book is not a history, but it is historical. And so you'll learn that, you know, Louis Armstrong was the first sort of major kind of celebrity type of person who was arrested, you know, for marijuana in 1931. And that's kind of where the book begins. It kind of goes from that point on and up into the current.
Yeah, I just think it's a great read, and I encourage everyone to get it. But let's go forth with some of the events that took place this week in the celebrity stoner news. I noticed that the Marijuana Policy Project had a big bash there at the Highline Ballroom, and you attended.
Yes, I was. I was at the fundraiser for the MPP this week. You know, the MPP has been doing New York and L.A. fundraisers the last few years, and they have their Playboy Mansion fundraiser coming up in June, which I've never attended. But I have attended the last two that have taken place in New York. And the one here in New York was a little scaled down from last year. Last year was a sit-down dinner at a place called Capital. And this year it was Highline. Highline's more of a music venue, and it was a stand-up event where, you know, it wasn't a sit-down dinner, so I think they were kind of cutting back a little bit on, you know, the costs. There were lots of hors d'oeuvres, you know, throughout the night, open bar, so it wasn't chintzy at all. But it wasn't quite as formal as last time with everybody sitting at tables like a gala. Some of the usual, you know, people were there, people associated with the MPP. Montel Williams, who, you know, constantly appears at a lot of their events, and he did his usual routine, which is basically, you know, getting a little teary about his own affliction, which is MS, and he should be teary because today's the last day of his TV talk show. He's actually finally going off the air after today. So, but on Wednesday, he basically made his statement, which is, this is not a game for me, folks. This is not a pet project. This is about my life. And he teared up a little bit and said some things. And Michelle Phillips was there from the Mamas and the Papas. She's on the host committee, and she had one kind of pretty good comment where she said, I've never seen a body bag with a victim of an overdose of marijuana. I thought it was sort of most interesting were two of the media representatives who spoke to the crowd, who are, you know, never really, you know, addressed this issue directly to a pro-marijuana crowd. Although it might have come through their some of their statements on their programs, but John Stossel, the ABC a reporter who's been on air for many years and has done a lot of clips about the drug war, and it's pretty clear that he's against it. He basically made a few statements and primarily stated that all drugs should be legal. And Kurt Loder, the former MTV News anchor, Rolling Stone reporter, author, he was also on hand, and he made a few statements about some medical patients and called on New York to become the 13th state to legalize medical marijuana. You know, you got a little bit of an overview of what the MPP is up to. There was one musical performance by Nicole Atkins and the Sea. She's a kind of a pop rock singer out of Brooklyn.
Well, it's good to hear that there was a lot of positive vibe there at the MPP bash. And another positive vibe, one of the things that Celeb Stoner's been involved in here in politics is the Stoners for Obama campaign. And, of course, this week we had the big news of John Edwards endorsing Obama. But another piece of information that came through was here in my home state of Oregon, where Barack Obama reiterated his support for ending the DEA raids on the medical marijuana states. I thought that was some great news this week.
Right. Well, that, you know, we've been covering this repeatedly at Celeb Stoner, and, you know, there's still this kind of issue about where Obama stands on the marijuana issue in general, and he's repeatedly, you know, favored medical use, and he's probably been dancing around the decriminalization question because it's kind of a hot topic. And I read this week DRCNet, another kind of attack on Obama, you know, for not supporting decriminalization or not standing up for it the way he should, when the video came out a few months ago showing that he had favored decriminalization in 2004 when he spoke to some students at Northwestern University. And I think it's pretty clear he's on our side. and whether he's going to decriminalize marijuana if he, you know, becomes president, that's another thing. But let's take first things first. Let's relax the pressure against medical patients, stop the raids of the clubs in California, and open the door, you know, so more people who are ill can access marijuana. I think that's more of a priority to him. And obviously it's a safer stance to take to, at this point in time, for I think Obama to make decriminalization a major part of his campaign might, you know, be problematic for him. So I'd rather we know that deep down, hopefully that's what he believes, but he's not going to really advance that very much during this campaign. Although, you know, we'd like to hear what he has to say more about it if he's being asked by, you know, smart journalists, you know, where he stands on this. Right now they're basically asking him questions about medical use, and he generally says the right thing.
Yeah, it would be very hard for a politician fighting for the presidency here to come right out and be openly supportive of the measure. I think it could be we could get some more information by, like you say, if we put the questions the right way, like, do you continue to support the mandatory minimums, or would you reconsider the sentencing guidelines, things like that, where we can get policy that would kind of fly into the radar of the general public, but those of us in the know would know what we're talking about here.
Right.
Steve, thanks for bringing it to us. Steve Bloom is the webmaster at celebstoner.com. Make sure you pick up the book Pot Culture. We'll have links to that up at our blog at stash.normal.org. Hey, Steve, have yourself a great weekend, man.
Thanks a lot, Russ. Thanks for all the hype.
James Rockford here from peopleradio.com, and you're listening to Normal, the podcast for the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws. Oh, I didn't know they needed reforming. It's illegal, you say? I'll be right back. Sorry, I had to flush my goldfish down the toilet. What was this about marijuana? Oh well, now on with the show.
Here at the Normal Daily Audio Stash, we work hard to change our nation's marijuana laws through education and discussion. But we also take the time to relax and unwind with an eclectic mix of pod-safe music from many independent artists. We look for music that speaks to the growing truth about cannabis, or music that speaks to broader themes of freedom, liberty, social justice, equality, and protest. To find out more about the artists and download the music you hear on this podcast, just log on to stash.normal.org. And if you'd like to get your music heard by the online cannabis community, just send us an email at stash@normal.org. Well, we got a special treat here on today's Daily Audio Stash. We're joined by Dirtball, who's calling from Bend, Oregon. And Dirtball, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. I'm glad to be here.
Yeah, it's the first time I've ever called anyone Dirtball on the air, so this is a first for me. Dirtball is a hip-hop recording artist, and he's with Suburban Noise Records. You'll know them from Cottonmouth Kings and DJ AF and some of the other tunes we play here, Potluck, some of the other artists that we play here. And Dirtball has a new album coming out called Crook County, and I wanted to tell our listeners a little bit about the album and when it drops.
It's called Crook County. It drops May 13th, so it'll be in stores everywhere May 13th. And I'm on Suburban Noise Records and run around with the Kings and Big B and, you know, Potluck and all those cats. So you can expect, you know, a nice blend of music on this next record with some, you know, familiar production. And it's just a good, solid album. I'm super stoked to have it out there.
How would you describe your flavor of rap?
You know, I actually am quite flavorful. Sometimes it becomes its own thing, too. So it's really colorful, actually, type of music. As far as this is the only way I can really describe it. You know, I have a faster spitting flow on a lot of the tracks, as well as some other, you know, different types of raps. But You know, all around, it's just a really good blend of different styles of music on this record. This is my third one with Suburban Noise, so it's, you know, it compared to the other two, it's, you know, a really good blend for people. So we'll see what it does.
So your third album, and how long have you been playing and recording?
I'm a lifer for sure. I've been doing music since I was a little kid. So it's, you know, band camp after band camp, different things growing up. So, you know, I've been trying to do bands, and about the past 5 or 6 years with Suburban Noise, well, past 4 years with Subnoise, but for about 6 years I've been honing my rap skills. So, yeah, it's really good to see, you know, now everything's kind of coming to fruition. So, like you said, it's the third record, and, you know, I'm just stoked to start touring this summer for it.
Well, so you go back to, you know, the school days and playing music in school. What instruments did you play?
I'm a drummer. Actually, I originally am a drummer rapper. So I kind of crafted my raps around my drumming in a lot of different patterns, you know, and just rudimentary work
from
the drums. So in my old bands, I used to drum and rap at the same time. Yes, I wore a headset for a while. And,
there's not a whole lot of rapping drummers out there, though. That's pretty unique situation.
Yeah, it is unique, you know. And Lou Dog from the Cottonmouth Kings, he just made me this cool. I wanted to do a stand-up cocktail kit, kind of like the old Remo cocktail kit and the jazz stand-up thing. But he made me this really awesome green and super just killer stand-up electric kit. So I'm going to be breaking that out on some tours later this summer. So, I've kind of been holding that as a back card thing, just trying to get my fan base developed off my raps, you know, and see what I can do. And now it's about time to do a few different things. So,
yeah, speaking of the fans, how can the fans get in touch with Dirtball? Where can they go on the web?
Yeah, the web is, you know, as cliche as it sounds, my MySpace account is my main vein. So it's myspace.com/thedirtball, one word, and then I have thedirtball.com, which is my website. So you can cruise around those, and obviously suburbannoiserecords.com. That's another place to, you know, see what's going on with me, see where I am. But MySpace, I actually interact with my fans on there, so I still do answer all my mail myself. So,
well, that's great to hear. You know, we'll have links to that up on our website, the MySpace page, as well as thedirtball.com. We want to encourage everyone to check that out. Now, are you currently on tour? Can people see you this summer?
Yeah, Big B and I are going out on our first actual headlining tour as the Subnoise Soldiers here in about a week. So you can catch us again on those sites. You can check for our dates. And we'll be out, you know, all around the country for about 25 shows. And then I jump off that and go out on the June Harvest Tour with the Cottonmouth Kings. And so we'll be doing some more East Coast, Florida, and then back up in through Texas dates, because we haven't been hitting that area so much in the last year and a half. So we're going to stay steadily on the road all summer and just keep pumping this record, Cook County. And, you know, and Big B and I are just, we've been touring like crazy the last almost 4 years. So, we just keep her going, you know, try and rep the Subnoise name and get it out there.
That's great. Now, is anyone going to be able to catch you at any of the summer cannabis festivals like Hemp Fest or the Amsterdam's Cannabis Cup or anything like that?
Well, we're working on actually getting me into the Hemp Fest. I'm hoping it goes down. I'm kind of waiting on a couple other dates. I've been trying to get up there. My old band played it. We were on the Hempillennium CD. It was called Chola. I think it might have been the 2000. So, yeah, obviously, Hempillennium, duh. So 2000, I was on that CD, and we played a huge show there with, I think, Woody Harrelson was, like, talking it right before us, and it was just such a great event, and I haven't had an opportunity to do that. But, yes, to answer your question, I'm hopefully trying to get on that. It's hard when you're on these tours because there's so many cool opportunities, you know, especially up here in the Northwest that I want to be a part of, so...
Hey, also wondering, just, you know, musically speaking, what would you consider some of your influences, both in the rap genre and maybe in other genres?
You know, it's all over the map. Like, being a drummer, I used to, you know, I was in the era of, not era, but the phase of, like, you know, Red Hot Chili Peppers and Fugazi and things like this that were, you know, not like the, it was more the alternative rock movement, and I was rapping too at the same time. So it was like, you know, when Easy Does It came out, and some of these older Boogie Down Productions, and some of these older to me, you know, that was when I was, you know, 13 years old or whatever. And so those are my influences, kind of the West Coast flavors. And a little bit like what got me rapping fast was kind of the Dungeon Family, Outkast, you know, that whole area right there. So those are a couple standout influences to my rapping. But as far as the drumming, you know, Red Hot, I definitely refer back to Red Hot Chili Peppers all the time. It had a lot to do with it.
Well, that sounds like a lot of fun, and sounds like a lot of eclectic musical influences there. I'm sure you and I could have a long talk about that. I come up from school music as well, all the way since sixth grade playing bass. So maybe we can get together one of these days and jam.
There you go. Let's do it, man. We're only 2.5 hours away.
Yeah, right on. And one last thing I always like to ask folks. Your preference, joint, pipe, or bong?
Oh, you know what? I'm a bong hitter. As much as I try and I love to take a joint outside, I try and stay away from bringing pipes around in my car, but I'm a huge bong hitter. I'll tell you, bong is my answer.
The answer is bong. Well, all right. Well, we're speaking with Dirtball from Suburban Noise Records. His new album, yeah, Crook County, drops on May 13th. Make sure you get a copy of it. It's going to be some great hip-hop. Check out the website, myspace.com/thedirtball, as well as thedirtball.com. Dirtball from Bend, Oregon, thanks for joining us here on the Daily Audio Stash.
Hey, thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
All right, let's fire it up. From the album Crook County, this is The Dirt Ball with Mushroom Cloud.
My mushroom dirt ball. My mushroom. Man, you still making some of that mushroom tea?
My mushroom.
Let's take a little trip.
My mushroom. Wanna dabble in the mushroom cloud with me? I'm ready to mack them down and get them stuck up in my teeth. Been a long time since the last time. No, I'm lying, cause I did it last week. Vacate my brain, getting ready for sleep. I put the poison in my mouth and then I turn up the beat. Somebody please tell me why the fungus among us, the smallest, be the one to make me really reach my peak. I'm sitting all alone in my zone and waiting for the effect. I turn the ringer off on my phone, I'm about to do the check. Check one was that I ate them and post it out on my deck. Lock the door so no one can intersect. When I'm tripping, seeing colors, you better leave me alone. I'm in a cloud with a boom and a pick, and I'm like a gnome right now. Starting to feel it all in my bones. I'm yawning like, but thank God I'm at home.
I'm in a mushroom cloud. Everything I'm hearing is way too loud. And all the walls around me calling my name.
Sound of the bass boom, here we go. Visual trace outs, I'm hearing weird audio. It got a grip on my brain, I should've took it slow. I bounce, pounce, pronounce everything I know. Steady tripping while I'm melting in my chair. I'm hearing all the people yelling when there ain't nobody there. I swear, I'm losing brain cells by the second and checking my pulse so I don't end up dying with my stomach swole. Full of psilocybin, psychedelic sickness. The way I'm riding solo in the cloud, there'll be no witness to this. The Northwest tops my list, and yes, I gets pissed when I'm thinking about me coming down. Biggie size, my eyes, they only pupils. The crow flies wise, and I've been high all day. So why don't you join me when I land? Put a stem in your hand. I'll take you on my mushroom cloud, and we'll fly away.
I'm in a mushroom cloud. Everything I'm hearing is way too loud.
Around me.
smoke lots of weed, man. I plant that big old seed, man. I smoke every strain there is in town. From the super sticky green to the headache mix brown, I smoke every strain there is around.
I know that I like it. I know that lots of people like it. So let's see what happens if you overdo it.
Do we have any pot smokers here today? Do we need all?
My name is Doug Benson, and I'm about to get super high.
The term medical marijuana, you've basically, you drank the Kool-Aid, because there is no such thing as medical marijuana.
I'm going to smoke pot every day for 30 days and try to remember to film it.
And my movie is going to be called Super High Me,
or Business as Usual. I haven't decided yet on the title.
I'm going to be hospitalized, I think.
Some people call it dope. Some think it smells like burning rope. I tell you, it relieves my mind.
Drug war documentaries to come out in a long time here is called American Drug War, The Last White Hope, and we're joined now by the writer, producer, director of the film, Kevin Booth. Kevin, welcome to the Daily Audio Stash.
Thank you, Russ, for having me on. I appreciate it.
Hey, no problem. You know, I think we should, let's start with the title of the movie, American Drug War, The Last White Hope, particularly the ending part of that. Why are you calling the drug war The Last White Hope?
Well, it comes, if you watch the film, it will make sense. It's kind of a double meaning type of thing, actually a triple meaning. In the film, it's first used by former DEA agent Celerino Castillo, who was stationed at the Ilopango Airport in Central America during Iran-Contra, and he basically witnessed firsthand U.S. cargo planes being loaded with cocaine bound for American military bases. He even had a camera, and he had a lot to do with bringing Oliver North to trial. And they used to refer to Oliver North as the last white hope after, in a sarcastic kind of way, after he got away with all of the crime, you know, bringing all the drugs into the American ghettos, and then was able to just walk away as a millionaire and run for a state senate. And he was like, so he was kind of like thought of like the last white hope to come out of this whole Reagan debacle.
In recent politics now, we've seen with the Democratic presidential race, Barack Obama, they've tried to tie him to controversial remarks by Reverend Jeremiah Wright. Specifically, one of the remarks is how Jeremiah Wright talks about the U.S. government inventing crack cocaine and bringing it to the inner cities. And your documentary focuses a little bit on that CIA and crack cocaine connection. Give our listeners kind of a breakdown of the truth, the potential truth in those remarks by Reverend Wright.
Well, yeah, definitely, and it's kind of a sad affair. You know, I almost wonder if Obama is having to distance himself just because of the game of politics when he knows, you know, it's obviously a lot of things that guy is saying is true, right? I mean, and everybody knows it, and yet everybody's having to act all outraged. But, no, that's correct. One of the main characters in American Drug War, you can see it at AmericanDrugWar.com. He's a guy named Freeway Ricky Ross, who's still in prison right now. Ricky Ross was kind of the head of the distribution unit here in California back in the 80s into the 90s, and it turned out that Ricky's cocaine source, a guy by the name of Danilo Blandone, was working with the CIA, and basically the CIA was unable to get the funding to run the Contra war when the Contras are fighting the Sandinistas. And so in order to raise money for this war, they started selling cocaine, and the CIA basically, through some of their you know, black ops and some of their connections, started a pipeline of cocaine coming back up into America that ended up here in Southern California. Ricky Ross then took it. He was just basically a young entrepreneur. He was smart enough to rise above the gang affiliations, but he realized that the street gangs were the best distribution network that was already totally in place. So he rose above it. He didn't affiliate himself, so he was able to deal with the Bloods, the Crips, all the Latin gangs, everybody, because he had a better prices than everybody else. He was making millions of dollars a day for several years, going, you know, uncaught, just right under the radar screen on everybody. And this money was basically funneling back, you know, through the CIA and back to the Contra Revolution.
Wow. And so it's just amazing some of the things that we learn in this documentary. And I've been a longtime drug law reformer, and I've seen the movie. It did debut on Showtime. If you've got the Showtime cable network, you can probably see it in rotation still, I imagine. But we wanted to talk a little bit about how people can get the movie for themselves. You mentioned the website, AmericanDrugWar.com. I also understand that you're dropping the DVD in stores coming up soon.
Yeah, it'll be in many stores. I'm not sure which all ones now. It's getting kind of squeezed to the pipeline right now of distribution. The official street date is May 27th, coming out through Passion River Films. I'm not sure, you know, it should be in many stores out there. But you can find it on Amazon already. And, of course, if you go to AmericanDrugWar.com, we're actually running a deal right now in support of Barney Frank's bill, where if you buy one DVD for yourself, we will, for no extra charge, send a DVD in your name to the congressman, senator, or state representative of your choice in support of the Barney Frank bill.
Wow, that's an excellent campaign. We'll get that up on our website, too, at stash.normal.org, so people can find all the links. I think that's a fabulous idea. It does need to be seen by our congressmen and our senators. It shows so much about the drug war, its history in racism and anti-competition between some of the existing markets that were trying to make drugs illegal for the control of people. It's a great primer on everything you need to know about how the drug war came about and how it continues to stay in business. And to take this maybe to a personal level, Kevin, I was wondering what motivated you to get involved into making a documentary of this breadth? I understand it took quite a long time to put together.
Yeah, I spent over 4 years on this thing, much help from my wife, Trey. But, you know, my original thing, my close friend, Bill Hicks, who is a popular comedian who's been dead now over 13 years, he died of cancer. You can't definitely link his cancer back to his cigarette smoking, but, you know, and I know he has cancer in his family, but I just, you know, he's one of those guys where he smoked and drank so hard and so bad that I just know that if he hadn't have been such a heavy smoker, he would have lived longer, at least, if he'd maybe not still be alive today. Cut to a few years after that, my brother, who was 9 years older than me, suffered from schizophrenia. He passed away due to a brain seizure brought on by taking his legal doses of pharmaceutical drugs. Actually, he was ordered by the court staff to take these drugs. He didn't have a choice, and these drugs ended up giving him brain seizures. This was not recreational use. This was just the use that he was supposed to be doing. Cut to several years later, my mother dying of liver failure due to alcohol, and then a few years later, my dad dying from cigarettes and alcohol. And my parents, you know, my parents were the corporate World War II generation, the martini lunch. My dad was the board of directors of a big corporation, you know, so forth. You know, these were, you know, very responsible people. But, you know, seeing my parents, you know, drink to the point where if I was to have ever done drugs and gotten anywhere near as intoxicated as they used to get every day, they would have, you know, locked me in a mental institution. So growing up as a child, just the hypocrisy of being able to watch my parents just get swacked on booze every night and then at the same time having them talk about how the Beatles were evil because of how they introduced drugs and how it got my brother hooked on drugs and, you know, the evil scourge of drugs while they're, you know, we're down in their Dewar scotch and vodka. So it's just the hypocrisy of how we have these corporations that are allowed to sell the alcohol, tobacco, and pharmaceuticals that kill almost a million Americans a year, while at the same time we have almost over a million Americans sitting in prison for nonviolent drug offenses. It's just ridiculous. Plus, you know, all illegal drugs kill just about 11,000 people a year, which is like about how many people die from lightning or snake bites.
That's an interesting way to put it. Yeah, far more people are dying from the tobacco, the alcohol, and the pharmaceutical drugs. When I'm doing the podcast, I often refer to it as the war on certain American citizens using non-pharmaceutical, non-alcoholic, tobacco-free drugs, because we're certainly not fighting for some sort of drug-free America, judging by the commercials on TV.
Well, it's just all about protecting their profit. It's just, you know, what my movie, I believe, attempts to show is just, it's just really all about the money. You don't have to have a conspiracy theory to prove any of this. You just follow the money. And, you know, where there's a will, there's a way. And where there's a lot of money to be made, somebody's going to be doing it. And, you know, we've long passed that, you know, through the looking glass here in America, where people really don't care if they're killing or destroying other people's lives to make a buck.
Yeah, it's an amazing film. I encourage everyone to check it out. Check out the website at americandrugwar.com. Get yourself a copy of the DVD. Host yourself a house party. Get more people to see this. We need everyone out there to learn the truth about the drug war and how it came about. Only through knowing the truth about it can we start to dismantle it. Like you said, it is all about profit. We've got to find some way of attacking that motive.
I just, you know, I think, you know, we're going to just have to all stand together. I mean, you know, my experience in the reform movement is that a lot of the groups all have differing opinions and differing ways of thinking how to reform drugs. But if everybody could just, you know, join up and at least, you know, if you could just divide all Americans into two categories, those who think the drug war is working and those who don't, and see, you know, which one has more numbers. And so if we all stand together and we all stand united and we're not afraid to stand up to these things, especially people who don't smoke pot, you guys are the ones that need to realize that this thing affects you just as much as everybody else, because this isn't just something that affects people who want to smoke pot, because that's what the government has, you know, propagandized everybody into believing, that wanting to legalize marijuana is just some stoner fantasy. It's not. This is about the pharmaceutical companies being allowed to just destroy our lives.
Well put. Thank you. Kevin Booth, the director, writer, and producer of American Drug War, The Last White Hope. The DVD's coming out on May 27th. Get yourself a copy. And Kevin, thanks for joining us here on the Daily Audio Stash.
Thank you so much. And you know, I look forward to working more with Normal in the future. And there's already a link to it on my website, americandrugwar.com, and check out sacredcow.com. And look forward to a future with you guys.
Thank you for downloading the Normal Daily Audio Stash, the growing truth about cannabis. We are produced by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C. Our executive producer is Alan St. Pierre. Our deputy director is Paul Armentano. Our webmaster is Brian Judy. And web production is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. As always, you can catch up on the latest information about marijuana at www.norml.org. And you can interact and download from our Audio Stash blog at stash.normal.org. For everyone here at Normal, I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville, hoping all your harvests are bountiful and your encounters with law enforcement are non-existent. We leave you today with another one of our cannabis quotes, this one from Harry S. Truman, the former president of the United States. Quote, "When even one American who has done nothing wrong is forced by fear to shut his mind and close his mouth, then all Americans are in peril." End quote. He may not have been talking directly about cannabis prohibition, but it certainly fits. We are doing nothing wrong. There is nothing shameful or wrong about adult marijuana smoking. I'm Radical Russ. Stay tuned for the Weekend Music Stash coming up tomorrow, and next week we'll be back with more news and interviews you can use for the cannabis community. And until next time, take care of each other, tokers.